explosive.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hello, Simon.
Hey, Nick. I'm great. How are you?
Good. Bring it down to like right about here.
About there?
Yeah, I think that's good.
All right.
We're just being so lazy with this podcast. But you know what? When laziness isn't noticed, I think it's okay.
I don't think this is laziness so much as efficiency.
I think it's efficiency.
Because the less, the more efficient and effective and brief the setup is for still a comparable quality of audio result and, of course, content being what matters the
content
most.
Content is all what it's about. The kids
Damn
want
right.
content these days.
I don't. Everyone wants content. I mean,
and the producers.
It's what I listen for. I'm not an audiophile. I don't listen to go, wow, these irrelevant words I care nothing about sound so crisp and clear.
You know, I've been listening to a little bit of Howard Stern on the SiriusXM. Channel 100 101 if they want to give me some money. And they have really, obviously, really nice microphones, fancy recording setup, but it's almost too bassy and too deep that it's too intimate inside my Kia Soul. Like, oh, I gotta like crank the treble up a little bit. Somewhere.
Yeah, see? Again, there is sort of this obsession with ultra high-end microphones. And I mean, yeah, I'm sure there are audiophiles out there who knows the difference, but particularly for voice only, if it's not actual studio recording of music or anything,
sure.
I've certainly never noticed the difference. Tweet us if you have noticed the difference and you want us to get better microphones.
Are you angry that we're not using the fancy mics anymore? Yes or no? We're talking about like this whole online poll idea. So I think anytime Simon and I come up with something that's kind of an ominous answer that has no yes or no to it, we're going to start putting up Facebook polls or Twitter polls.
Yeah.
I don't think Instagram has polls. So
I don't think so.
Keep an eye out for that and we'll kind
probably
of
probably Twitter because it's just more accessible, I
probably,
think.
Probably, yeah.
I just avoid Facebook as much as I possibly can in every way.
Facebook is weird because the algorithm for pages really sucks.
Yeah.
Like I'll say, hey, we got a new episode. And it's like, we showed this to 40 people and one of them liked it because they barely saw it. So their algorithm is quite weird.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Facebook a few years back abandoned all pretense of non-evilness. It's very well documented that they're unambiguously evil now. Like, there's not even a pretense now.
I like that they have shifted. You submit a link, a news link, and it's less likely to show up. Like they're shifting kind of back to status updates and photos.
Actually keeping it about people.
Yeah, but still, it's. Yeah, I think I mean, they have a responsibility for something that happened in 2016 that I will not go into detail about because it's very partisan. That they've acknowledged, but I don't think have done enough. but you know, that's a whole other story. That's not for a magic podcast.
Indeed.
Well, we're thinking about changing the logo here of Two Magicians, One Mic. We're working on that. Hopefully, when this episode comes out, we'll have finalized
these are
and
the
decided.
Big issues, Nick. We are thinking of changing the logo.
I like that you're like just more involved in this podcast. You're like, we need to change the logo. It sucks. I was like, yeah, it's from 2013. I don't feel like changing it.
Well, I think this gets onto one of the topical things that people don't know about is that it's been a running joke on this podcast that people keep coming up to me, Simon, and going, hey, I love your podcast.
Literally
and
happened, five times last night
at
the Magic
exactly.
Castle?
Yeah, exactly. And I go, you mean Nick's podcast that I just happen to be on more frequently than any other one person.
Mm-hmm.
And we have finally decided to lean into what people seem to be responding to and actually make it our podcast, which is very
it's
weird for me. I didn't intend
because
to
I
be.
Edit
yeah.
it.
But exactly. It's still yours, but I'm sort
you're
of,
now at 40%. I'm at 60%.
Exactly.
It was 10% for you.
Yeah, it's more 30. I mean, you do all the actual work.
No, I was talking – my cousin
– I just helped make it popular,
I was
apparently.
With my cousin Ryan, who's a lovely listener. Shout out to my cousin Ryan. He's been listening since I started this thing in like 2012.
Yeah.
And he's like – we were talking – I saw him when I was back home a couple weeks ago. And we were talking about – he was talking about the evolution of my co-hosts. And he's
oh,
like,
yeah.
The first guy talked too much. Second guy, really nice, didn't talk enough. Third guy, just right. He didn't say that, but that was essentially the context.
I am the baby bear's bed of podcast co-hosts.
But the thing, you bring a nice level of intelligence because I just blabber on and don't really know what I'm talking about. You actually have a minor or a major in psychology.
Yeah,
something you dropped today when we had coffee. Which
yeah.
you know,
I did a psychology major.
There you go. I think that helps.
Software engineering major. I had a weird university experience.
You went to school for something real. I went to school to pretend to be other people.
Nice.
Still
so politics?
You know what? If you have a degree in theater, you can easily go into politics.
I believe it.
Although I was doing a show over the last weekend, one of the 10-hour-long shows I did in Lake Tahoe last weekend, which we'll go into in a sec. But I mentioned somehow that I spent $80,000 on theater school, and just saying to somebody else, "Oh, you're a great actor." That I have a bit where I need somebody to act something out. I'm like, "Good for you. You didn't have to drop $80,000." The audience, instead of laughing, just got kind of quiet.
Speaking of politics and the intersection of that and theater, I was on the last cruise ship gig I was on. Mm-hmm. At one point, and this was sort of the clientele, at least an element of the clientele, was I noticed a guy wearing a sweater that on the back in very nice sort of, what's it called, sort of needlepoint, like embossed like fabric. You know that way you get designs on sweaters that are made of like raised fabric on fabric, whatever that's called. That said, that had an American flag and said, "Party like W, dress like JFK, think like Reagan."
Party like W?
I assume he was a partier. I don't know.
Well, he was. Yeah, he was arrested for alcoholism.
Oh, really?
I believe drunk driving.
Yeah. Which
he cleaned up and he became president.
Again, also, you know, very.
That's you know, I don't disagree with that. I'm a very moderate voter, but I don't disagree with any of that. That's kind of funny to me.
It was just funny, like, awesome. Speaking of sort of, you know, remaining sort of political, at least, you know, this isn't a politics podcast, but just seeing the opposite of that, someone going, "Yeah," screaming at the world, "This is what I think about politics on my sweater."
Well, that's just every cruise ship I've learned. It's not like, it's such a mix. You have you have very right-wing people, you have very left-wing people on ships.
Yeah.
And these people are just cooped together and figure it out for weeks on end.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? That's how it should be.
But it's also, I mean, I don't know about you, in at least a couple of the ship lines I've worked on, the contract for guest entertainers explicitly says, do not discuss religion or politics with guests at any point. Just do not. You know, sidestep any conversations relating to those two topics, actually in the contract.
Yeah, which Disney, is smart. Disney put that in, I don't know if Holland America, because those were really the only two ships I've been doing in the past couple of years. Disney for sure is like, it's funny, the adult show when you do Disney is just purely dependent on the cruise director of, there was one time I was like, "Oh, I think I went a little too far, sorry about that." And he's like, "Oh no, keep going, man, it's great." And then 2 weeks later, completely different cruise director. And you don't know where you stand. You don't know. Mm. Like, you're not swearing. Yeah. You're not being explicit, or you're not saying anything gross. But still, it's like every ship has its own. Every audience has its line. Yeah. And you don't know. But it's good that it's put in on paper, so you know specifically what you should not be talking about.
But I mean, if in doubt, keep it mild and moderate, because you definitely can be funny and brilliant and entertaining without crossing anybody's lines.
I think that. Especially now, like, I think we may have talked about this, but I was at Comedy Magic Club a few months ago, and some guy did some Trump stuff, and that's a very liberal audience, and even they were like, we don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
You know, we hear it every single day, and there is such a craving now for nonpartisan, non-political stuff.
Yeah, completely, because we've hit saturation point. It's just, it's all depressing. The world is burning. One of the reasons entertainment exists is to escape from all that for a moment. Just for an hour. That's one of the reasons I don't like sort of I don't like things like true crime or period pieces, or sort of, I tend to like science fiction and speculative stuff, because there's enough shitty stuff in the real world. I don't need it in my film and TV and media as well. There's a few exceptions for things, really great things, but even Breaking Bad, something like that's very real world, is still very fantasy real world.
Yeah.
It's still very bizarre, fantastic, so out of the ordinary.
Written to be so calculated.
Yeah.
Just from each plot point or each episode point.
Yeah. I don't enjoy sort of films and TV shows about sort of just real people's shitty lives that are horrible. I've seen enough actual normal human darkness in the world day by day.
There's been so many movies that have come out. I mean, well, that's kind of always been it, but it really is at that point of, is this going to make me sad for no real reason?
Yeah.
I'm not
watching. For no benefit.
Yeah.
If it's going to make me sad but really open my eyes to something powerful and transformative, then all right, let's bring it. I'll take the sadness to do that.
Something I can't comprehend is local news and why people watch local news. Like, I'll go home and people just have it on. And I think it's just one of those things, if you grow up with it or if it's just always been on, you're like, that's we got to watch the news today.
Yeah.
Or specifically the local news, what's happening. But it's always like, so-and-so got shot. This terrible thing happened. This and also, there's a parade on Saturday. And you're like, how is this making anything better? I don't need to know that there was a car accident at 3 a.m., you know, on the freeway. Yeah, that's awful. And I hope everybody was okay, but this is not making anybody feel good. This is just making the world seem so much darker than it is. And I don't think people comprehend that it's like, this isn't actually how it is. This is how you're being told it is.
Yeah. I mean, that's a well-documented thing, that the world is, on average, far better than it has ever been in nearly every way.
Mm-hmm.
Still with a long way to go in nearly every way. But we have so much more access to information now. And so we see all the cockroaches that we didn't used to be aware of that are in our world-sized apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And we think it's worth it, even though it is actually overall better. We're just hearing about more stuff. And as we know, I mean, this is media studies 101, bad news gets more attention, more clicks, more views, more discussion, all the things the cycle is optimized for, and hence it floats to the top.
Sure, yeah.
But let's talk about magic.
I was just thinking that. I was like, we've gone how long?
We've
now?
Gone way this? Off topic.
We're at 11 minutes.
This is, and, I do not think this is what our listeners subscribe for.
Hey.
Wait, but listeners, what do you subscribe for? Hey, tweet us. Let us know. If you're actually loving this, I'd be surprised, but that's okay.
I legit transition here. I do want to thank everybody who has been monthly subscribers to our Patreon. We only have a handful, but it's...
But holy
it's,
crap.
What's great is like everybody's giving like $3, $5 a month, and that really adds up because it's a monthly thing, and it's nice. It just shows up in our bank account and it goes directly towards our you know, what we're paying for web hosting and...
new equipment as well.
New equipment.
Better microphones.
We're getting there.
Are coming.
We got some lavs that we're going to order.
We're looking at lavalier microphone shopping at the moment.
And also, I looked at like the amount of people subscribing to the podcast just on FeedBurner, and we were talking about this earlier. It jumped quite a bit up. And what's funny is your episodes get more downloads than Piff the Magic Dragon, which is mind blowing to me. I spent a year trying to get Piff on the podcast. I'm like, this is going to kill. I'm going to get thousands and thousands of downloads. And I look, your episode's been up a week. You've already surpassed him by like 100 downloads, and his has been up a month.
Sure, Piff. You may have a wildly successful Vegas show and a massive cult following, but I get more downloads on some random podcast than you do. Eat it.
I don't know what any
that's
of that
real
means.
Success.
That could just be random. We could have been hacked, and somebody just could have been just some Chinese company could have.
I'm going to enjoy my moral victory. Moral victory, of course, being code for loss.
Yeah,
that's what moral victory means. But I mean, Piff's great, and also speaking of Piff and podcasts, the is it Richard Young? The UK guy who has the Magicians podcast is what it's called.
I should know this.
Piff's episode on that is one of the greatest episodes of any podcast I've ever listened to. Mm-hmm. I love it so much.
No, he's a great guest, and that's why I was so excited to have him on.
Which is also, by the way, the joke I just made about suck it, Piff. I'm winning at life is because Piff's disdain for I think the thing was broadcast journalism. Was well documented in that podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Piff gives zero shits about podcasts, which is great.
I could tell it from the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
So I had to like,
I love that.
I had to adjust. But my favorite thing was like, how do you keep going, man? You're doing all these things. How do you keep going? Like, how are you doing juggling all the, you got a show, you're on tour. He's like, this is the easiest job in the world. I'm getting paid just to do what I love.
Yeah, exactly. Essentially. Just do stuff and turn up when they tell you to.
It's not hard. I'm a man in a dragon costume.
Oh, God, yeah. And that's one of the things I really like about Piff is he gets it. He's fully aware. There is very close to zero bullshit with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like the bit from the podcast with Justin, I hope that is his name and I haven't just accidentally insulted him. It's a really good podcast. I've listened to many episodes of it, is where eventually after lots of prodding by the host, because Piff sort of dodges the question and avoids it, he's going, you know, like, what advice do you have? Like, how did you get successful and famous? Like, what, you know, what sort of advice can you give us on that? And eventually Biff tells it like it is and goes, look, I can't give you any advice. I didn't have a plan. I didn't do this through ingenuity or brilliance. I one day by accident had an idea to turn up to a party wearing a dragon costume. I randomly improv the line, you know, you may have heard of my brother, Steve. It got a laugh. And I realized now that worked really well. And then everything just kind of took off from there. What advice can you draw from that? Like, it's very much like Bo Burnham, you know, someone else who I think we really respect, said, you know, asking me for advice on how to get successful is like asking a lottery winner for advice on getting wealthy.
Yeah.
Like, what? How do you – I can't give you any advice. Mm-hmm. I have great admiration for people who understand the path they've taken and understand that it's just often the whim of the universe. Yeah, you work hard and, yeah, you are dedicated and diligent, but so are millions of other people who never just got that lucky right place, right time moment that amplified their hard work into actual success.
You see that story with, like, most of the cast of The Office, which is funny. Mm. Yeah, they're all like, yeah, I was about to throw in the towel. 2 weeks later, I get The Office.
Yeah. And you don't hear the stories of the million other people who did throw in the towel.
Exactly.
Because they'd run out of money and just couldn't, in good conscience, keep going.
The idea that it's – and once again, I feel like we've talked about this, but it's so important to me that there is nothing wrong – and I think giving up is the wrong word. There's nothing wrong with throwing in the towel and going, eh, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
I think we have so much stress in society that if you give up or you – or if you're done with this segment of your life, you're a failure.
Yeah.
And that's just such an awful thing. It's like, no, you friggin' tried.
Yeah, you tried a thing. It didn't work. And have, if you want to, you know, rephrase it, whatever, you're choosing a different direction. Whatever it is, you're choosing not to do that.
That's chapter
often
is
a very
done.
Sensible thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've worried about that. I mean, recently things have been going a lot better in the last few years. But I spent many years going, am I, which gets this thing I'm about to do in Indiana, working on this damn show I've been working on for about 5 years, kind of writing this show and trying it in various – every Fringe Festival I ever did was kind of progressive drafts of this show idea. Mm-hmm. And frequently I found myself wondering, am I that guy? And we all know that many of that guy or that girl or that whoever that is sort of work – who is chasing a windmill, who's just got this dream that – from the outside, it's clear it's just a dumb, stupid dream that shouldn't, isn't actually a good idea. Or they've got this idea for a show. And like that, or is that guy in whatever episode of Silicon Valley who's been inspired to write this app? He's like, yeah, man, you've inspired me. I'm going to quit my job and do a startup. And his app is an app to track where you've parked your car. And the app is, and he's like, well, how do you track it? GPS? No, it's basically you write down, you make a note of where you left your car, you write it down. And his app is just Notepad. But for only for tracking where your car is. And it's the worst, stupidest idea ever. And we've seen people like that with blatantly stupid ideas that are just bad. And I kept wondering in the years I was working on the show, like, am I chasing a windmill? Like, am I actually just that guy who's so obsessed with the idea he can't see the forest for the trees? And rather, like, this is not worth this much effort. This is not worth beating yourself up over. Whereas now it's actually starting to finally get legs. And I might find... It might be turning out to actually have been a good idea all along that I just was right not to give up on. But you don't know. A lot of ideas are worth giving up on. Some ideas are just not worth it.
I think you kind of know in your heart when it's – like I'm going through this transition right now where I'm kind of giving up on the full silent character show, which is something a lot of people come up and say what they like most about what I do.
Yeah.
And I'm in this weird transition now of, A, if I'm not talking – the show isn't as fresh. I can't comment on what's happening in real time. It's not as improvised. And B, I feel like the audience doesn't know me. They walk away going, that was interesting. There isn't as much of a connection. Yeah, and I don't have as much of a connection with them.
Who was that vaguely Buster Keaton-esque magician guy?
Yeah. Who was so-and-so? Or like, we didn't get a name. But also, it's just – I'm at this new chapter where I'm kind of – I'm able to now navigate the best of both worlds where I can go, okay, talking, set up introduction into silent piece, going to silent piece. So now I'm able to go back and forth. And that's kind of similar to with that your show, what you're talking about. It's taken many years to figure out. I'm like, well, if I'm only doing silent, I can't talk because X, Y, and Z reasons. It's not as artistic. It's not as meaningful, you know? And mostly it was just a confidence thing of I don't feel as confident when I'm talking, or I don't feel like I'm as likable when I'm talking, but it's trying to pick apart why you're doing what you're doing and still be true to yourself. And I think that's probably what you're doing with your show in terms of – that's why it's probably so scary too.
Yeah.
Because there's so much more on the line.
Yeah.
There's a higher – rate of being able to fail.
It's not just a show. It's a piece of my heart and soul. It's a real piece of me and my life and my genuine obsessions and hopes and dreams and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, it's much more intense. There's more at stake if it doesn't work out. Which is very confronting. It's very, very scary.
And we were, you were talking about theoretically phasing out, doing less and less ships so you can do more of that.
Yeah.
And, but that in itself is terrifying because that's, you're saying goodbye to your source of income.
Yeah.
And then just putting it on the line going, well, I hope this worked out.
And is that worth it? And that's the thing. I think it's such a disease in society and always has been. We only hear about the success stories.
Mm-hmm.
It's survivorship bias is the term. We only hear the stories of the survivors. We don't hear the stories of the ones who died in the shipwreck or didn't.
What are you doing
in
the local news? Call back.
Boom. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
And so people get these distorted ideas if you only look at a very, statistically, a very small percentage of the actual stories that work out well. They're the ones who are doing the TED Talks and appearing on the things and whatever and everything. We only hear their stories mostly.
Sure, yeah.
And so it distorts it.
Yeah, oh, man. I love how Penn Jillette hates TED Talks.
Oh, yeah?
I was like, yes.
That's funny.
The more and more I watch them, the more I'm like, I think this is all bullshit.
Yeah.
But
there are some great ones and some great people doing them. But yeah, it's once you start to see enough of them, you realize how contrived and processed the format is, how synthetic it is.
I am successful for this reason, and it's because you've been thinking of everything wrong.
Yeah.
I don't
or even, even worse, the plague that is TEDx. Making implying expertise where there is frequently none.
Yeah,
but that's a whole different. That's a whole different thing.
There's a whole lot of judgment coming from me right now. I'm working on not being as judgmental.
Chase the Zen.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Totally. And going back to something we were talking about at lunch of chasing the Zen in terms of I did a theater in Lake Tahoe last weekend called The Loft, Thursday to Tuesday, and most nights were two shows a night, which is, you know, would be fine for us because we did, you know, 18 or 20 or 30 shows a week in China, and you're like, yeah, you're conditioned to it, it's fine. But we were doing 15, 20-minute sets. Here I'm doing 2-hour-long sets back-to-back, 7 o'clock and 9 o'clock. And it was such an eye-opener to have to sustain my character and sustain the show for an hour.
Yeah.
Because even on a ship, we're doing 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's done so quickly. But something about that extra 15, extra 20 minutes you're doing is you learn to pace yourself. And especially when there's all the crowds were good except for one audience, which was a last minute added show. And it was just a meh audience. It was 9 o'clock on a Sunday. They were all just sleepy and slightly drunk. And
yeah.
It is what it is. We're talking like at the castle, if you get a bad audience, you're doing a 20-minute set, you make it work and you power through. But in this case, like I'm with these people for an hour.
Yeah.
And I have to, going back to your Zen thing of I can't write them off. Yeah. We have to make this work.
One way or another.
They all spent $30 to $40 on a ticket for this place, which is like I don't charge that much, but that's what this place was charging. And that was also a new thing too, knowing the audience had spent sometimes $40 to see my show. And most times people are spending $10 to $20 to see my show.
Well, not specifically for that area. It's not like this is Manhattan or anything. That's non-trivial money. Money is subjective based on the local economy. And
I learned that by selling lots of Learn Magic DVDs after the show. Where like, oh, these are more touristy. People are okay spending money here. It's not – they're on vacation. They're in a different type of mindset. Yeah. So I guess in that aspect it wasn't that worrisome. But –
well, it's also like the difference between a, you know, a high-end cruise ship where they've spent minimum $1,000 a night on this cruise, and minimum goes way higher than that. What a $30 DVD costs versus people who have, you know, thought about $10 to come see whatever show at whatever comedy club.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, I've realized on cruise ships I'm not charging enough for my DVD. Yeah. I think that's why I don't sell as many. Like, it was only $20.
Oh, that's not worth anything.
Can't be that good.
Yeah, perception of value.
Yeah, it's weird because the perception of value and going back to sustaining as a performer, sustaining what you're doing for an hour. And it's funny, you get so conditioned here in LA to do these like 5-minute spots or 10-minute spots. And you don't even, there's no reason to be nervous and on one aspect of it because it's done so quickly. But on the other aspect, it's harder because you have to establish who you are.
Yeah.
It's very rare that people know who you are, what you've done, or seen you before. Even if you've been on, done a lot of TV stuff, it's still that's kind of a thing of the past.
That's also a tiny minority audience will actually know anything about what you've done or have seen you on whatever.
Yeah. So you can
never assume that.
Yeah, so it's weird balancing. It's we're doing the same thing, but just the time that you spent on stage is a whole different ball game. Yeah. And it's there's no you just have to it's do by learning, you know. Yeah. There's no learn by doing, I should say. That is the correct way to say that.
Well, but it's also, I mean, a brief tangent to also when you talk about doing an hour-long set versus a five-minute set, goddamn, I mean, taking a moment to appreciate the wonder that we can actually do an hour-long set now. I can, again, that thing of think about what past you would think about present you. And past me, back when I was first attempting a stand-up magic set, of about 15 minutes, and that was a gargantuan, intimidating, terrifying task. 15 minutes, I've maybe got two routines that are not terrible, that I think are actually okay, and even they were not.
They have a beginning, middle, and ending, or have a reason as to why you're doing
it. Yeah, the concept now of being able to easily do an hour-long show, that's so worth taking a moment to celebrate in terms of how far that one comes in one's skill improvements and everything else. I think it's really important I struggle to remind myself to take a moment to celebrate things like that and look back and go, wow, we have come so far. There's so much further to go. Again, whether as an individual or as a species and a society and all these things, but let's look at what we've achieved and then look forwards to continuing to achieve way more than that. But celebrating that.
And I'm in this new spot of trying to celebrate, I would say 15, 20 minutes of my show is not completely original, but is very much so me.
Yeah.
And now the challenge is, okay, how do I make the rest of the material? Do I get rid of that? Do I do the Steve Martin thing and just throw it out? Or do I just keep tweaking things and changing it more and more? So they may have seen that I don't want people to – the thing I hate, especially on cruise ships, is people saying, oh, that was great. We've seen this trick before, but we never saw that. Yeah. I just focus on them saying, oh, we've seen this trick before. Yeah.
It's a valid thing to think about. That's one of the weird things about ships is it's one of the most surprisingly magic savvy audiences I've ever performed for, because a lot of these people go on a lot of ships. A lot of ships have a lot of entertainers, a lot of those are magicians. And so they do see way more magicians than the average person. And it is confronting how many magicians do the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The same stuff.
It's such a great kick in the butt too. Yeah, you would think here in LA, oh, I got to be on the verge. You gotta keep working on new stuff. But truth is, you can coast at the castle on your 20 minutes.
Completely coast.
You can coast on your 5-10 minutes in all the spots you do here. On a ship, once again, going back to doing 45 for an hour, it's a whole different ball game. And it's I don't know. I don't know how to describe it.
I had a recent thing and it's also funny, a la the Institute of Layman Studies, right? The idea of always basing your judgments on what the actual normal people are thinking about your stuff. And I actually had, you know, we all get compliments a lot, which is great and always to be celebrated and never to be taken for granted. But most of them blur together.
Sure.
And I got another interesting compliment on this last ship that I just got off a few days ago. Was one of the cast members, so the on-ship singers. Really cool guy. And he was sort of saying, came and said, hey, I really enjoy that. I've seen dozens, if not hundreds of magicians, because he's been on ships a long time, right? He's on ships full time. He's a ship singer. And he was going, you are the first magician I've ever seen who didn't do the ropes, which was his way of saying Professor's Nightmare, like the long, medium.
Yeah, yeah.
And I inferred that. I said, you mean the short, medium, long? And he's that.
Mm.
First magician I've ever seen on a ship to not do that trick.
Sure.
And again, I have a lot of original material I'm very proud of that is very original. And whether it's completely original or just an original remapping of something that is classic. And for a long time, I worried that I was spending too much time on that rather than just getting booked, which is a lot of the conventional wisdom is just make sure your magic's fine and get out there and get booked. And I just couldn't bring myself to do that. It was, I just couldn't do it. And I always thought of that as a failing. So it was actually a nice I've had a few vindicating moments like that where, oh, hey, it is nice this like decade and a half of obsessively working on stuff, often to the detriment of my actual career and bookings, has actually paid off in at least some way.
Sure.
Which is nice.
Yeah, I think, I've been realizing that this is just us congratulating ourselves how great we are.
Let's talk about it.
The episode, the title of this episode is We're Great and You're Not.
Look, you might be great. Some of you might be great. We don't know. Who even listens to this? I don't know who they are. I'm fascinated. Who are you, listeners?
All these 10 people that keep coming up to us at the castle.
Yeah, it's true.
No, it's you look back, and I think both of us have been doing this for quite some time, where I always am like, it's funny, like doing an hour-long set, I have the material, but still I was like nitpicking my set list. Oh, yeah. Okay, this goes here, and then I don't know if I have enough time. When it's like, I do have the time. I've been doing this for a while, and you have the things that will work, and you just – I don't think I will ever not – I don't think I'll ever stop doubting myself and stop doubting what works and what doesn't. But especially now, I had a crazy month of nonstop busyness, and now it's just – it's not slow, but it's much slower than it was. So every time I get up on stage now, which is once a week or twice a week as opposed to 5 or 7 days a week,
yeah,
like it was last month – it's you're going through that confidence thing. You're re-going through, yeah. I don't know, is this going to work? Is this right? Or
yeah, definitely.
I'm on a tangent now. I don't know where the hell I was.
Okay, something topical. I don't know if you plan to talk about this, but thinking about if we're thinking of doing this bi-weekly, we're going to have to be a lot more in tune with magic pop culture again. No, I mean, whether the people listening to this are magicians or magic enthusiasts or just, I don't know, anybody else. I mean, you worked on, can you talk about legally any of the stuff you involved with Magic for Humans? I haven't seen it yet. I've just been too busy.
Yeah, a lot of people
But apparently it's going really well and people
it's
are really
crazy
liking it.
To be... My title is magician PA, but I was essentially an assistant to the magic team, and I was on set for a good chunk of the shoot days, and I'm in episode 5 for 30 seconds. Awesome.
Yeah. So for the people who may have seen or heard of this show, any interesting insights you can offer from behind the scenes about it?
No, I learned a lot. Justin was great to work with. He's just as nice as he is on screen.
Yeah.
He's got a million things going on, so if you text him, don't expect him to get back to you right away. But he's a great guy. But just working with Rico de la Vega and Stuart McLeod and Colin Marlette was great too. And Marcus Eddy, who was just a genius builder.
Yeah.
But Rico and Stuart I learned the most from because, you know, we're literally on set. Like the man on the street stuff is man on the street. Like we're literally – we're finding people, getting them, hey, do you want to be part of the show? Great. And sometimes they're like, they're waiting for like 30 minutes to 45 minutes to do the quick one segment. Mm. And I learned so much about audience management. Magic on TV is just like a whole different ball game. I had never done anything like this before. And like, I'll just say I was a glorified gluer and paster, but there was stuff I helped out on, and there was legit things that I, without going into too much detail, you know, it was cool to be a part of. And like, there's this whole, like, probably by the time this episode comes out, it'll be forgotten, but there's like this whole viral thing going on now where people are making think their kids are invisible.
Oh, yeah, the invisibility challenge thing.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting segment. I have seen that. I've seen that little clip.
It's funny. And like the amount of, most people like it, but the comments online, without giving anything away, it's like, oh, he was faking it. I was like, I was on set that day. Those guys were not faking it. Yeah. And the way it was done is even more impressive than you could even comprehend.
Wow.
Not saying anything else.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know if impressive is the right word, but more interesting.
Well, that taps into a thing that we face a lot as magicians, first world magician problems, say even sub-niche, is people thinking things are set up or things are stooged or the audience members are in it, because they basically never are, unless it's Chris Angel's show and, you know, screw that guy. But it's too much work to use people who are set up in live shows.
It was that, and like there was some stuff that was on the front page of Reddit for Magic for Humans, which I'm like, oh, that's awesome. You know, that's a really cool thing. And then I'm reading the comments was such a mistake because I originally commented, you know, anonymously as my username, but said, hey, whoever posted this, thanks so much. I helped work out on the show. It really means a lot that people like it. Awesome.
Yeah.
And then I started getting questions and I was answering. Everybody was really nice. And I'm like, oh, I got to delete this. Like, it's not my show. I just helped out on it. And I just had like this weird moral conundrum. So I deleted everything. But then I'm like, I wonder what other people are saying. And I'm reading the comments and they're like, it's fake. This is fake. Yeah. And all I wanted to do was like, I sat in an office with this amazing magic team for 3 months sweating. A lot of times the air conditioning wasn't working. Like, why would we sit and work on this thing for 3 months if it was all stooge?
Yeah, exactly. You know?
It's like, why would we put all this work into something like that?
Yeah. And it's funny because, I mean, stooge just never looks as good, isn't as good. It's not as
obvious.
Interesting for us.
It's so obvious when, you can't fake, like the invisibility guy, you can't fake that reaction.
Yeah.
That's like a genuine moment he's having, and I don't care what type of actor you are, you can't fake that.
And even if you could or wanted to, like we're not just doing this stuff for views and money. We're doing this because we actually are genuinely excited by the creative challenge of it. There's nothing interesting to us about stooging it. That's boring. That's lame. That's dumb. Mm-hmm. Like, it can on very rare occasions be a worthwhile like way to do part of something, but just ugh. It's not interesting or fun or cool.
I've been playing with a part of that in the show, something new I've been working on, and it's not a stooge thing, but it is, without giving too much away, it's ahead of time having somebody select something.
Yeah.
So from their point of view, they've had a free choice of selecting something. But from the audience's point of view, when I do it on stage, it's going off the top of your head.
Slash your reality slash yada, yada, yada.
And I struggle morally with that a little bit, but I don't know. It's a new concept. It doesn't feel like I'm taking advantage of the audience. I don't know. It's a weird thing.
It is tricky, isn't it? Because you have what is the nature of the implied contract, and that is not made clear. That's not explicit. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons I don't do mentalism. And I initially, when I first got interested in magic, almost exactly 20 years ago now. Holy crap! It's been a while. I was really interested in mentalism. I was reading all the mentalism books and everything. And I stopped eventually. I did a few – a lot of my initial live shows were heavily mentalism-based. And I eventually trailed off it for the one simple reason that when people inevitably asked, how did you do that, the number one question that any mystery, illusion, whatever worker gets is, I realized with the stuff I do now – I could tell about 80% of the truth. I can say they're illusions achieved through usually sleight of hand, misdirection, and a whole bunch of other hidden stuff to create the impression of a thing that didn't actually happen. That is absolutely the truth, completely true. But with mentalism, you can't tell any of the truth without destroying the illusion. And you have to completely live the lie about the very nature of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that creeped me the F out. Because I don't want my life to be a lie. If I'm meeting people through performing, I don't want whatever relationship I have with them, whether it's just as audience to performer or some who become a friend or more than that or whatever, I don't want that to be built on a foundation of lies, which is what all mentalism has to be. Otherwise, it doesn't work. Because you can't tell any of the truth about the methods, because it has to be either pseudo-psychic or pseudo-psychological in a post-Derren Brown world. And it's not. Like, it is hidden mechanisms, and it's the same techniques as magic, 90%. Yeah, there's some probabilistic, like, semi-actual real, you know, trying to do some psychological forces, but those are not reliable enough to actually be the core methods. Mm-hmm. It's all the actual methods of mentalism that are nothing to do with what they appear to be. And I just couldn't live with that. It still creeps me out to this day.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I have friends that are just... my friend Mark, who I started this podcast with years ago, he's great. But yeah, he was always comfortable living in that. And I do what, like two or three mentalism things that I think are covered in magic. I don't think they appear, the exception maybe one comes off as like pure mind reading.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was the same way. I was never comfortable with that. And what's funny now is there's so many devices now that are being used. Yeah. I don't care if I'm giving anything away because
screw that. Right.
But what's funny to me is if people were to learn how this particular trick was done, it's exactly what they assume.
Yeah.
It's Bluetooth or it's a small technological device.
Well, more than that, the thing with mentalism is it it's intrinsically based on lying about the very nature of what you're doing.
Yeah.
With magic, you're using sleight of hand and misdirection and technology and whatever, a bunch of stuff to create an illusion of a thing that is absolutely not real nor meant to be real. 100% honest in the nature of what's going on in the show. But in mentalism, it's intrinsically dishonest. Like, it's intrinsically deceptive. Yeah,
there's really no way around. It's tough because even guys will start off going, if I had real powers, you know, I wouldn't be here. I'd be you know, playing the lottery or whatever the line is. But still, then it goes to the next level of I don't know. It's just again, a whole different thing.
Well, it's also now, again, in a post-Darren Brown world, it usually comes into the implication of psychological / NLP techniques that are being used.
Yeah.
That's almost always the implication. And even if it's that's not stated explicitly, that's where the audience is. Like, the audience is either guess the real method, that it's, you know, whatever, or they guess it must be something psychological or, like, subliminal influence, which it is not. Like, it's basically maybe 2% that at best in a mentalism show, at least most. You know, there's a few people who are, like, a lot of Luc Jamais' stuff, for example, is actually based on some really interesting influence-based psychology. But even that, you know, even the actual methods eventually are not real.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I don't know. What do you do, right? You know, cue hate mail from all mentalists or whatever.
Yeah, I think we probably pissed off a whole bunch of mentalists.
Yeah, but I mean, look, there are worse things in the world. But, that's why I just never could take to it. The fundamental dishonesty of it.
I think that's what makes us a little bit different in what we do, in that even
– let's talk about how great we are, Nick.
Once again, this episode is we're great and you're not. Or we were great and maybe you are too.
Yeah. And that said, by the way, there are a lot of like people who do mentalism who I really like as people.
No,
like
some good
friends of mentalists. It just is just something about it just kind of irks living, me on some level.
It's like you said, living in that world of ambiguity. And I think what works for us and why we see magic kind of similarly, we see it as a performance art form in that I see it the same way as somebody playing piano. It's like, this is how I do it.
Mm.
You can't do it. And I don't mean to like rub that in your face, but this is how it's done. But hopefully I still impress you. And if, I don't know, I go back and forth with this because if people walk out of the show going, man, I don't know how you did that.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I don't think I entertained them enough. But if they walk out of the show going, that was hilarious, I go, oh, I didn't amaze them enough.
Yeah. And it is tricky, like finding that balance.
Because we are the label of magician. I just got some new promo shots done. And it is so important to me. They have no cards, nothing like magic related in those photos.
Yeah.
I just want them to see an idea of hopefully what I'm selling, you know, what the show is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know if I will. That's a continuing struggle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've always run like the plague from the label magician, but I've sort of grudgingly realized I can't run from it. If I have to pick a label, I don't want a label at all because that a label always cuts off things around the edges. It always limits you to fitting into this cookie cutter category. But if I had to pick a label, I tend to go for illusionist because at least that is an accurate description. Mm. I am a person who is creating illusions of things that are not really happening. It is honest. It is sincere. But to most people, that's just a synonym for magician. And eventually it comes back to magician. And I've sort of mostly made peace with that. I mean, if you actually really get into the semantics of the word, we are literally magicians because magic really means anything done by sufficiently advanced or obscure means to be incomprehensible, even in sort of a Harry Potter type fictional context, right? Magic just means sufficiently advanced or obscure technology or technique. That's actually what the word means if you get to it. Wingardium Leviosa is advanced / obscure technology and technique that is possible within that world. Magic actually doesn't mean impossibility ever, even in a real fictional magic, real magic, Disney magic context. There's always a mechanism. There's always cause and effect. There's always conservation of energy of some kind within the fictional reality of the magic, quote unquote. So magic's this weird word that no one ever actually uses it the way they are actually. No one thinks they're using it the way they are actually using it, because even quote unquote real quote unquote magic is still not impossible. It's just the equivalent of that reality's electricity or electromagnetic radiation or some kind of energy that can be harnessed through technique to achieve a thing. And by that definition, which is the actual real definition of magic always, we are literally magicians because we are doing things through advanced and or obscure methodology that appears incomprehensible to someone who can't do it or doesn't know how it's done. But it is still an illusion because what we're apparently doing is different from what we're actually doing. But now we're getting really deep into some advanced stuff that's probably lost everybody.
Well, that's
I'll eventually write a whole article about it. It'll be great.
It's a much more detailed explanation of how.
Because I apologize.
Your brain works that way, and my brain works like, yeah, that's what I'm going for. But the way I intro my show now is, hi, how's everybody doing? You guys want to see some fake magic tricks? Great. And that was always the end of the line. But last week, and I figured out, after that, I should say, do you guys want to see some fake magic tricks? Great. I haven't figured out how to do the real ones yet. And to me, I'm getting there, but simplifying that long explanation you gave, but which is everything I agree with and how I perceive magic and how I perceive performing. I just love the idea of telling the audience, hey, this is all fake, but I'm going to fool you and you should be more impressed by that because you know it's fake.
Yeah.
You know, getting to that Penn and Teller idea.
Yeah. Well, because, I mean, this is something also Ben Earl talked about that I really enjoyed when I read his essay because it was one of those occasions where someone had found a way to better articulate things I'd already been thinking about. Mm-hmm. That's very gratifying. That essentially the art and craft of magic, quote unquote, is to create the experience of something possible in the mind and experience of an observer. And that is a real thing. That is a thing we are actually doing. That is what magic is. It is real because that is what magic is. It's creating the impression of wonder and awe in the experience of the observer. And that's a very complex, very nuanced art and craft a lot of effort goes into. And that is a real thing that we are really doing. Like, we are literally real magicians. It's just that most people don't actually realize what that word is actually meant to be implying. Because you say magician, you either think goofball in a top hat with a rabbit, or you think Harry Potter / Disney magic. And it gets confused. It's this one word, magician, that's describing a lot of very different things and hence is prone to misinterpretation. Like the word love or the word feminist. Like, you know, these are words that are describing quite a lot of different subtle nuanced viewpoints that sometimes have a lot of variation. You know, I mean, like feminist, for example, a lot of people see that as like, oh, that means militant man-hater. Well, that does describe a small sub-percentage of that, but can also mean someone who wants equality or someone who wants all these other things that are much more viable.
Hey, watch that political tone there.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We got to stay on topic.
This is a nonpartisan podcast.
I apologize to everyone for getting way too deep into a lot of things there.
No, I think, well, that's just how your brain works.
Yeah, I think about this stuff. I think about everything all the time on, like, just so many, I don't know, it's annoying.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, that's the thing, I've also had to learn over the years that most people don't care and that I have to be okay with that. And that's all right. It's a funny thing. Like, a lot of my early solo shows that were back in, 2003, I think, was the first time I ever attempted a solo show in a festival. It was way too cerebral and like basically just.
Man, I hope there's video footage of that.
There is. Oh, there is. And it's brutal. Oh God, it's hard to watch because it's bad. It's me just basically intellectually jerking off for an hour interspersed with magic tricks. And, you know, you need to go through those experiences of trying stuff. And again, much like the episode with John, right? And about notes generally being open to realizing that you're an idiot and you need to do more. Learn more, do better. Mm-hmm. All of us are wrong. Every human being on earth is wrong about most things. The only question is, what are we wrong about and how wrong are we? And how can we get less wrong tomorrow and next month and onwards and then do better stuff?
How can we get less wrong? That's a good title. I like that.
Be less wrong. Because that's the thing, even if you're basically right about something, you're never 100%. Again, the lesson magic literally teaches us is none of us ever observe reality as it really is, ever. Mm-hmm. There's not a thing as human beings we can do is objectively observe reality. Our brains literally do not, you know, hey, psych major talking again, but our brains do not have access to the raw inputs from our senses. We literally cannot ever actually observe reality objectively. We're wrong about everything to at least some degree. To some degree, every perception we've ever had in our lives is distorted or skewed.
And memories too. Memories are just massive copies completely. You're just replaying something over and over. Yeah. A copy of it. So each time you think of that memory, something is altered, something's changed.
Even that initial memory is always inaccurate because the way memory is encoded and everything. And this is no news to anyone with a psychology background. They're like, yeah, no shit. We've known this for decades.
Or seen the movie In and Out.
Exactly.
Is it In and Out?
And the upshot of that is we're always wrong to some degree about everything, even if it's only very slightly wrong. That's good. That's non-wrong enough to get through the day.
Mm-hmm.
But being open to that, and that's actually, even though that sounds confronting and depressing the first time you think about it, it's liberating. It means we're wrong about bad things as well. We're wrong about our limitations. We're wrong about how bad things are. We're wrong about all kinds of stuff that leaves open to more possibilities of stuff being way better than we think it might be or could be and becoming better in the future.
Jeez, this is a deep one.
This is where I live, man. This is
we're in Simon's apartment. And he's just like in a zone. I'm literally surrounded by just shelves of playing cards, shelves of just very organized plastic drawers, each thing meticulously labeled.
This is me just fighting against chaos. But also, but look at the floor. Look at like the random piles of semi-unsorted paperwork and shit. I'm fighting a constant battle against chaos and entropy. And that's why all the stuff is so meticulously labeled. Because if it wasn't, imagine if all this crap you're looking at and all these drawers of like raw materials and power tools and adhesives and tape and all the stuff I used to invent and build half the stuff. Imagine if this wasn't meticulously labeled. Imagine the meticulously labeled. Imagine the chaos you would be looking at in this room.
I don't know.
It's the only way I survive is by trying to.
I'm looking at a little couple of little hands in plastic bags that are, you know, for magic purposes, and it's amazing. You couldn't fathom if you're in here what you're looking at, but it's amazing. It's definitely the representation of Simon's brain.
You know, it's funny. I don't know if I told you that story. You may have just accidentally quoted somebody. My friend Jordan came here for the first time to visit to work on something, and he walked in and just looked around for several seconds, like a long, slow, just look. Really drinking it in, and said, "This is like being inside your brain."
Totally.
It's almost like being John Malkovich.
Yeah.
It's like the apartment is really a manifestation of my brain. It's
just one giant.
It's a terrifying place.
Of you.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Well, this got existential, didn't it?
Hey,
I guess
that's why it's the existential. And do we want to keep it magic podcast or performer? I guess we talk a lot about magic as much as I don't want to. I want to make it more general for people. I think this is
Well, there was something I keep thinking about is if to really understand any field deeply, whether it's magic or theater or financial accounting or whatever, if you understand any field deeply enough, you begin to understand the nature of humanity and the universe. Like, because everything eventually is particles dancing. Everything eventually comes down to the fabric of the universe if you understand it truly deeply. And yeah, it's not like you need to understand anything that deeply, but you go deep enough and you learn fundamental. Every field of human endeavor touches in the center of the core things. It's about human beings doing stuff between birth and death because we are trying to survive, reproduce, and then figure out what to do with the time in between those three things. You know, we're trying to figure out how to make life better and more palatable and to reduce suffering and to increase pleasure and to strive to be more than we are as a civilization and as individuals. Like, everything eventually reaches that point if you really get really into it. Why do we do anything?
What is this table, man? What is this backpack?
And that's the thing. You really can look into this table right here, this coffee table.
Don't break your table.
Or the backpack. And if you really, there's this thing that I can't remember where this originated, but it's a concept in engineering called the five whys, as in WHY. If you look at anything and ask why five times in a row, you get to usually a much realer sense of what the thing is about or what the problem is. Or if you're having a problem solving technique, then you go, you know, why is this table here? Well, because I want to put stuff on it. Why? Because it's in my apartment. And eventually you get to, we're human beings trying to survive in the world. And as a consequence of that, we eventually realize we need tables for stuff. And so someone makes them because people need tables. You get into microeconomics. IKEA makes them to sell them because I need them. And how much do I want a table? How much am I willing to spend on a table? Where did money come from? Why do we have money? What is the means of exchange?
Clearly $25 with the table that I'm looking at.
I think that might be almost exactly what this
table
is. Pretty
sure we have that same table.
Yeah, it's the standard IKEA coffee table.
Everybody in LA has this table. But you're like, you know what? That's worth $30. Oh, my God.
It's true.
This is a very strange episode, but that's okay. That's what the viewers come for.
Apparently.
They come to learn nothing and go, who the hell are these guys? What are they talking about? Hey, give us money on our Patreon.
if for whatever reason you want to keep hearing more of this, Give us money. Or don't, that's also
Mike,
okay.
TwoMagiciansOneMic.com. There's a link on there.
I was willing to pay $30 for this table. How much are you willing to pay to for this podcast to keep existing?
Probably negative $30.
You know what? Maybe we should start a another Patreon for Stop the Podcast. Donate to this if you want us to shut the F up and stop talking.
Oh, man. How great would that be?
That would actually be really interesting.
Because people come up and say, we really enjoy the podcast. But you know there are people who are not coming up to us.
Who listen to it and go, what is wrong with you two?
Yeah,
idiots.
Walking past, go, that was a waste of time.
Why aren't you just being positive and upbeat all the time about everything?
I feel like we're kind of positive and upbeat. I think we just you and I are similar in that we overthink things. You way more overthink things than I do. I used to think that I was very overthinkative, and then I met Simon Cornell. So it's fine.
There was a moment. So The Big Bang Theory is a very popular TV show that is objectively a pretty bad TV show. Like, it's not good. But again, good, what is good? It's subjective. Do people enjoy it? Clearly,
very
a lot of people.
Very mainstream. It applies to a very mainstream audience.
A lot of people's grandparents love that show.
Yeah, just because they can easily digest it, I think.
Yeah, and there are many things wrong with that show that it would be a whole episode to go into. But
science is always right.
Yep, I appreciate that so much. It's like all the math in The Simpsons is always right because there's so many actual advanced math majors on the writing team. I love that.
I think that's important, yeah.
And yet, I have watched a lot of Big Bang Theory episodes, I think the first three seasons, even though many times in every episode I was just going, ugh, this is so just anti-intellectual and reductionistic and all the characters are one-dimensional caricatures of everything. Mm-hmm. Ugh. Yet every damn episode makes me solidly belly laugh at least a couple of times.
There's always a couple solid jokes
that are just so really brilliant jokes. And there were two that stuck with me that haunted me. And one of which was Sheldon goes off to Penny about something. He goes on a Sheldon rant about, but if this, then that, which implies that, and therefore I have to think of it this way, and therefore that, and I have, you know, blah, 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 goes full Sheldon about something. And Penny looks at him and goes, it must be hell inside your head. And he just thinks for a second and nods and goes, sometimes, yeah. And the emotional resonance of that just nearly knocked me off my chair.
I think the character of Sheldon is brilliant, and I think just Jim Parsons is brilliant. I don't think anybody else could really play it well. But there is such a truth into the way he sees the world that it's so strange for that show because, like you said, all the other characters are very one-dimensional and very, he is this way, she's this way, she's a failed actress, she does this, she is smart. And his character is just looking at everything from such a backwards perspective.
Yeah.
And in a way that I think weirdos like us can relate to
seeing a lot of unexpected truth. A lot like Carl Pilkington as well, right? Sometimes the opposite. Carl's, you know, they're sort of, you know, played as a moron and Sheldon's played as a naive super genius. But they both sort of in different ways. Carl Pilkington is fascinating.
He's on a show, if you're not familiar, well known from Ricky Gervais, but also on a very funny show called An Idiot Abroad.
Idiot Abroad.
If you took a travel show and had a man traveling who hated travel?
Yeah. But yet, in his sort of very blunt, hilariously blunt approach, he often uncovers bits of surprisingly thought-provoking insight. Yeah. And I love that.
I realize how much of a terrible person I am by watching that show and going, I agree with him a lot of the time. And just even more so now, like when we're doing ships and being dumped in like the weirdest areas, which if you're on vacation is great. You're like, this is awesome. But the fact that you're going there for work and like, you know, battling X, Y, and Z obstacles.
Yeah, dealing with trying to get your props and equipment there and dealing with...
The only objective you want is to get to your bed and sleep.
Yeah.
And you see that with him. And yeah, the things that come out of his mouth is just...
Did we ever talk about my two-night stopover in Dakar in Senegal in Northwest Africa?
I don't know.
We'll save that till next episode.
I think so, because we're running out of time.
Because that's a good travel story of what the hell is this that I'm dealing with
well,
right
you're
now.
Just, see, I got offered a weird gig or a weird ship recently, and I turned it down, and I may never work on certain cruise line again because I turned it down. But I said, I don't want to do that travel. But you're all game for it. I'll go to Africa.
And that's partly because of some probably deep-seated subconscious self-loathing. But also because of – there's actually a few reasons. One is having faced multiple times in my life where I was basically broke and really had to worry about paying rent and buying food. I've felt that. Now, it's not like, you know, I didn't come from real hardship. You know, I'm not some BS woe is me sob story. I still had parents who could have bailed me out.
But, yeah.
You know, it's okay. But I felt that empty bank account feeling. And sure. I never want to go there again if I can avoid it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so I very much still remember, take the gig, take the gig. Don't get complacent. Don't get greedy. Don't get arrogant. Take the gig. Take it while it's there because it might not always be. The universe is fickle. But there's also the whole thing that I am fascinated to keep exploring the world, both literally, geographically, and in terms of the human condition. Just the different subcultures of humanity, even within the same city and or ethnicity or whatever, there are so many universes of normality that people live in that are so different in every imaginable way, and that fascinates me.
That is the wild thing about doing ships, of like, even when I'm in a room by myself, all I'm doing is like missing my wife and dogs. All I want to be is at home.
Yeah.
There is still a part of me that's like, it's really cool that I get to do this.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
get to just God. See this part of the world. Because people, not everybody get, yeah. most people don't get to experience that.
And it is, as we sort of, I remember talked about a lot in Macau, this is a problem, quote unquote, of colossal privilege. Of all, excuse me, burping. That was something I realized a long time ago is, and I think it was listening to Jim Carrey talk about some stuff, is that no matter what your life circumstance is, how much or little money you have, how much or little privilege you have, how you improve your life over time, you will always have problems. Mm-hmm. There will always be problems. There is no place you can get to that where there won't be problems. All you can hope for is better problems.
His quote is, I believe we've quoted before, is, you know, I wish everybody could be rich and famous for a day to see that it's not, you know, it doesn't solve your problem. No. I forget how he ends it, but it's essentially
and it's still
that.
Way better than being poverty stricken and or like, you know, like in a trapped in a sex dungeon or something like that. You know, my God, there are so many ways it's so much better, but it's not like a magical silver bullet that means now you no longer experience suffering. You experience different kinds of it from new sources. And I always try to sort of remind myself, literally sort of in a meditative mindfulness sense, to appreciate just how good the problems we are facing are in the scheme of things. So I'm like, hell yeah, I'll go to this crazy gig in the middle of nowhere and deal with perpetual jet lag and the detriment of my social life and, you know, personal relationships and everything, because even though that's not perfect, it's a good set of problems compared to what I could be facing.
And going back to like you remembering, you know, when the bank account is low, and it's also, like you said, a good motivation to just shut up and just accept the journey.
Yeah, don't complain. Or when the bank account is stuck in Macau, as we well know.
That's your own damn fault.
It really is. It really is. But you know what? It resulted in a great story. And I still try and think of that, even in moments of facing hardship, dealing with it by thinking ahead to the good story it's going to make.
I think what traveling has taught me the most is to let go of, because I have a lot of anxiety and, you know, anger things that I often will struggle with. And it's taught me a lot to let go and just accept what the situation is. And I've been very lucky. I haven't had any crazy miserable stories, knock on wood, yet. But there has been things that have happened that you're like, all right, that was not expected. Or this day got much longer.
Yeah.
Or the next couple of days have gotten much longer because of what had happened. But it does teach you to it gives you a very Zen perspective of it, accepting what's thrown at you and just not reacting negatively if you can't help it.
And accepting that just things aren't going to go perfectly or even necessarily well all the time, and that's part of it. It's part of human
I now existence. Just expect when things go well when traveling. I was like, oh, that's a nice
it's bonus. Exactly. It's to celebrate. It's like, good job. This is beautiful. This is glorious and to be celebrated. It's like that thing I think it's important with interpersonal relationships, whether with performer audience or, you know, actual personal relationships, that to never expect, no one owes you anything. There's nothing we are entitled to from any other human being except basic human decency and not to, e.g., be attacked, raped, or murdered by them. We can expect that. That's fair. But that when someone, again, as a performer, to never assume anyone knows or cares about you or what you do, that's important. So that when they do, that's a glorious benefit to be celebrated. That's a gift. That's not an expectation. Or even for someone to, no one owes you a callback. No one owes you attention. No one owes you consideration. But when those things happen, quite frequently, because most people are actually pretty great, decent people, it's yay, that's a good thing to be celebrated rather than an expectation to be assumed.
Yeah. travel has, yeah, it shows you that, yeah, most people are good people. Mm. Stereotypes do exist, and you see those represented often, but then you also see those stereotypes completely wiped yeah, away completely. Minutes later from another example. So it's it kind of depends like how you what you your brain wants to gravitate to and what you want to react to.
And I always think the interesting things worth exploring are the ones under the tails of the bell curves, the things outside that mainstream medium. Those are usually the really interesting, exciting, cool people and things and experiences.
I like how like your voice through. I'm going to have a lot of editing to do because your voice has gotten like way more intimate and quieter throughout this whole episode, and I've just gotten louder. But when you get quiet, that means you're really processing.
Really
what's
getting
happening.
Into it. just then. Shit.
Just gonna be,
It's
gonna be whispering.
Look at
these
voyages of self discovery.
Oh,
there is that running joke that comedy / performance art is basically therapy.
Oh, it's all therapy. Yeah. I just. The whole reason I get up on stage is so people will talk to me.
Well, it's also it's that well, this Deborah Frances White, comedian / improviser person in the UK, who was the first person who really taught me improv back when I was doing that for a year in London. She, and I'm paraphrasing, was the first person I heard voice. It's not like this is she's the only person who's observed this, but no one fully emotionally healthy gets into performing. Basically, like, if you're in performing. There's something you've struggled with at some point in your life in some way, probably lack of attention or love and affection as a kid in some way, almost always. And there's exceptions, sure, under those tails of the bell curves, but overwhelmingly, you don't get into performing arts unless you've got some kinds of early life demons that you're to some degree dealing with. And you might deal with them, and then and meanwhile, you've enjoyed performing and you stay with it. But the initial motivation is usually something existential or primal.
Yeah. We're just never going to end. It's just going deeper and deeper into the hole.
You know what? Nothing ever ends. the world keeps.
Fuck.
We
edit that out.
It is. It's true. It's the human condition. We, generation after generation, will fight the same battles and face the same struggles as we continue to tell different variants of the same story of human existence.
Yeah.
Hopefully, gradually, in an upward way.
I feel like you're just becoming more and more Jordan Schlansky on Conan right now. Who's like?
I don't know who that is.
You need to look him up.
Yeah,
he's a heightened version of you. If he didn't really have a sense of humor or self awareness, but oh my god, I imagine his house looks exactly like this.
Oh,
if you
wow.
know who Jordan Schlansky is, you'll appreciate that reference.
I will have to look into that.
him and Conan went he took him to Italy because he's this guy who like think he's very into cultural things, into wine, into nerdy things, but he thinks he's like this heightened cultural being. So Conan took him to Italy just to like exploit this whole thing. It's beautiful.
I've got to check that out.
We need to end, but
we really do.
It's a good one.
Well,
thanks for listening. Please support the Patreon. Send us fan mail or hate mail to magicians1make@gmail.com. And yeah, we'll be back. We're trying two a month here. I've been doing 2 a month for a couple months now doing interviews, but now we've discovered that people don't like listening to interviews as much. We're just going to hear us rambling. It goes through so much effort
to
set it up, to get the person together, to do the email, to do the interview, and then we get not as many downloads. So it's
that is fascinating. So yeah, we're going to try
supply and demand.
We're going to try this biweekly, the Nick and Simon Existential Magic Hour.
Yeah, it'll probably fizzle off like most things do.
Well,
but we'll try.
We'll find out.
We'll see.
Only one way to find out.
That's true.
As they say in my home country, we're going to suck it and see.
Oh, that's just gross. All right. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagicians1mike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs @twomagicians1mike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.